If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
And welcome to Game Development Unchained. This is the best podcast to learn about getting into and through the video game development industry. I am one of the two hosts, the better looking one. This is Larry Charles. I am a level designer. And I would like to introduce the co-host, best friend, environment artist, awesome athlete, incredible game developer, and wise man beyond his years, Mr. Brandon Pham.
Larry, you're so kind. I am the less handsome host, Brandon Pham. How you doing?
You're not supposed to acknowledge the insult, man.
It's all good. It's right. An honest podcast. We're going to have an honest conversation about the game industry.
Yeah, so how about I just ask you a quick question? Mr. Brandon Pham, how long have you been making video games? Just so everyone who's listening can know a little more about us.
I've been working in the industry for over 8 years. I started my career out in Tukumarin on Bioshock 2. I worked on various projects since then, Lost Planet 3, XCOM, and recently Call of Duty Advanced Warfare.
Oh, How about you? You made Advanced Warfare.
Yeah, you might be familiar with it. How about you?
Well, let's see. Dang, it's been so long. The first game that I'm known for is Yars Revenge. It was a DLC kind of, or, you know, Xbox 360 and PS3 game. It was a small game.
I've heard of it.
Yeah. After that was Lost Planet 3.
Ah, yes. So yes. We both worked on Lost Planet 3.
Yes, we did. It's funny. And then after that was I went to Call of Duty Advanced Warfare.
Yeah.
So it's probably where we have such a good relationship because we worked together and went to college together.
Yep.
And now we podcast together.
Now we podcast together. Lost Planet 3 was our first project after college professionally. And it was a fun project for as long as it lasted.
Yeah, it was. You're talking about for you.
Talking about for me.
I was wondering why you're smiling so big. I was like, oh, that was a good project. Like, oh, yeah.
All right, I don't see your video actually. It's unfair.
Well, because we're recording the podcast. You just need the voice.
Well, yeah, you get to see my facial expressions and I don't get to see yours.
All right. Crying. Baby. There you go. So, can you see me now?
Yeah, I see you.
But none of the listeners can see me, so, you know, it's private and intimate for no reason.
All right, I'm gonna make eye contact. I like seeing the people I talk to.
All right, cool. So, moving forward, once again, everybody, if you're listening to this, thank you very much for joining our podcast. There were thousands and hundreds of thousands even of podcasts to choose from. You spending an hour with us, we appreciate it. Thank you.
Oh, let me ask you this. What makes us unique? What's so special? What are we going to bring to the table?
I mean, hello. So just so you guys know, you're going to get an unadulterated, unfiltered, and unsponsored view into the game industry. I don't mean unsponsored as in no one can ever give us money for a commercial, because that's fine. But yeah. No one is ever going to write us a cue card.
Right.
Oh, this game is the best game that you could possibly buy for. We're here to give you guys the truth. We've gone from school to independent game development to professional game development. We've worked on small games, big games. We know the hows, whys, reasons, and every little nuance behind game development. And a lot of people out there probably don't know these things. They don't know, you know, the lowdown that we have, the insight that we have, and they don't have the connections that we have, right? So, sure, you can listen to a podcast from two journalists who play a lot of video games. And, you know, no disrespect to them. That's awesome. Like, I definitely like competition. But in this sense, we actually work in the industry. We still work in the industry. We work at companies that don't mind us doing this. And we've got connections, right? Like,
yeah. My hopes with this podcast is to bring you guys the ugly truth as well as the great stuff about the game industry that you might have heard about. You know, bring on interesting people that can relate to not just being in games and for games. It's people that either have gone into independent companies, have formed their own projects outside of AAA, have transitioned into a self-funded type of environment for themselves where they're not at the whims of the corporate needs or punishments. So hopefully we will bring you that type of entertainment that you can relate to.
Yeah, and hopefully also learn a thing or two, you know. So let's take it back to the start, Brandon. Why did you decide to go to school to learn how to make video games instead of just, you know, give it a shot and see what happens?
I gotta say, I didn't know that it was a thing until I start flipping through magazines at Barnes & Noble's. So I was duped in a way. Like, I was baited by the AI Institute of California in Orange County. I saw the ad in my junior year of high school. I decided to check it out. I went to the orientation. They got me. They said, you know,
they got you.
Spend $90,000 and you can get a job and you'll be just fine. And so that, I feel that was the first thing about the game industry. And I don't want to sound sour. I had great times. But I think right now, the beauty of the game industry is exactly this moment where independent developers are able to make the game they want and are in charge of what they, you know, the creative needs that they've been hungry for all those years. So it's an exciting time, but that's how I started. Well, that's how I began my career.
Let me ask you a question. So you said the Art Institute ad said pay $90,000, or maybe the on-campus orientation, pay $90,000, and when you graduate, you'll get a job.
Yes.
Okay, let me ask you this. Are you working in the game industry right now?
I am working in the industry.
So did they lie to you?
Oh, no.
Sounds like they promised exactly what you have.
Yeah, I would say it's 99% all me and 1% AI. I mean, the truth is, like, 99% of the students that we graduated with, since, you know, Larry and I went to college together, did not make it. They're still looking for jobs.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who stood right next to me and got their diploma who are still looking for their first legitimate job. Yeah. I'm not going to lie.
They're filling up my LinkedIn messages right now every few months.
What do you mean by that? Wait, what do you mean by that?
Asking for a job, asking what's up.
Oh, hey, Brandon, haven't talked to you in like 10 years. Hey, man, check out my portfolio. I don't know, slide it on the desk of somebody who can give me a job. Yeah, exactly. Bro, we need to hang out again, just like old times.
It's getting pretty dangerous. I'm glad that LinkedIn lets you preview it without clicking on it because they can see that you see it. You don't want to explain that.
Oh, man. Like the little scene icon and you never respond back.
Exactly.
Not good.
LinkedIn knows. They know. They know what's up.
Yeah. So I'm assuming, based on your response, that you probably wouldn't go the college route if you could do it a second time?
I think nowadays we have so much possibilities to not only self-publish, but self-teach at a cheaper alternative. You know, the online web is growing every day, and now people like us who are coming out of the industry are directly connected to students. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a matter of time before AI and all those institutes or establishments will stop conning kids, and kids will wise up to see that they have choices now.
Yeah, I hear you. How do you feel about, like, online alternatives?
I think it's pretty good. I think the options that we got now have been plentiful and taught by industry professionals at their very own home. So the convenience is there, the affordability is there, and it's the time is ripe for this type of education. How about you, man? How do you feel about everything?
So I'm about half and half, right? Like, I definitely know that I paid a whole lot of money to get this bachelor's degree in video game art and design. Yeah. And I know that I did a whole lot of work getting myself good at level design and, you know, building on my portfolio and my network. But I can't say that I was without opportunity that I wouldn't have had if I didn't go to AI. Like, meeting some of the career service advisors who have been so adamant in trying to help me get placed when I first started, and being so close in proximity to all these video game developers. Now, granted, I could have done that just by moving to California, but I feel like having the safety net of the school allowed me to meet like-minded individuals in person, like build actual real relationships with potential future video game developers, and just kind of go through like a shitty struggle with people who were going through a shitty struggle at the same time. You know, like, it's one thing to see a bunch of names on a website who are like students with you versus like, hey, like, this is Adam, this is David, this is Mark, we are in this concept art class together, suffering, all staying up till 2 a.m. trying to get this homework done. So I'm on the fence. Like, I think having an in-person education, especially in the video game industry, is awesome. The way that it's currently being done, terrible.
Yeah,
I look at it like that. I feel like the for-profit, most of the emphasis is on the profit, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what's hurting right now. That's why 15 AIs are going to shut down, I think, because they got sued for some... I mean, I don't really know the details on it, but I just know that, like, 15 AIs are shutting down. They're getting sued by the government for taking, like, government grants or, you know, low-income student loan money or low-income qualifying student loan money, knowing that these kids weren't going to graduate, weren't going to...
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much, I think you nailed it. They targeted low-income families to secure these loans, because these loans will be paid through through Sally Mae and all the Naviant.
And those students can't pay it back. Like,
yep.
One of the complaints was you had 500 graduating photographers in Philadelphia's Art Institute.
Yeah.
Where are 500 photographers going to go in Philadelphia?
Does it match up?
Yeah.
I think looking back and actually going through the industry and the educational system, I'm starting to see similarities as how it's run, like from beginning to end. Mm-hmm. Like, it's being run by people who don't really enjoy the game industry as far as development goes. They're more in it, they're treating it more like a regular business, where it's not the passion, it's more profit. So, I mean, of course, there's benefits and cons to both of that, you know, running it like a business, making money off of it. But I think we're at a time where it's opening up to a different way of doing it and still being able to be profitable.
Yeah. That's true. I agree. I'm looking forward to what education is going to be, let's say, 7 to 10 years from now. I think there's a big paradigm shift, especially in the creative space, right? I think there's a big paradigm shift in people going to actual college for game design, for graphic arts, for photography, for these sorts of things, to now this abundance of just quality, solid online training materials and even online college courses, you know, that are becoming more accessible, less about paying $130,000 and more about just learning your trade. Like, one of the things I complained about at going to a college was I didn't really touch game design until I was already a year and a half through the program.
Right.
I had used half of my student loan money and room and board money before I even got to the classes for what I thought I wanted to do. So could you imagine what would have happened if I didn't go all the way through? If I was like, this isn't for me.
Yeah.
I'm still on the hook for $45,000+.
Yeah, for classes that you never really majored in. Yeah. And I think that's the change here. That's the difference. Like, the accessibility is different now, and the exposure of what each job in the industry is becoming more and more apparent with new students. Like, they know kind of what each job entails. And so now you can just pick and choose what kind of classes you want, and that's the exciting part. Like, now if you want to be a designer day one, you don't have to draw or rig or waste all your money on that. You can just go ahead and do design 101.
Yeah, as a game designer, I can't tell you how many times I needed to animate, I needed to draw life models, I needed to model buildings. Oh, actually, I can. Only one time out of all my jobs, I only ever had to model one time, and that was at a startup studio, and I only needed to make one asset.
Right.
I made a building.
Yeah,
I would.
That's $5,000 of education.
I would have much rather have taken like 7 to 8 game design classes and just those classes and paid for just those classes.
Exactly.
To be honest. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just getting to the point, really. Like, all this. The school systems are set up this way, right? So for to fill up a 3-year program to get that degree, that really doesn't mean anything. So
I think it actually is the baccalaureate requirements that are incentivizing the schools to create such bloated coursework, I'll say, right?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. Well, I mean, let's talk about your origin story. How did you... You didn't really begin high school as a game scene. What happened?
No, man. My long-term joke, my long-running joke is at 5 years old, I knew I was going to be a doctor. I had my Fisher-Price doctor set, the little stethoscope, the little plastic Band-Aids that were like bracelets. I had everything. I was going to be a doctor. My 6th birthday, my mom came home with a Nintendo and just messed up all those plans, just messed it all up. I've been a big gamer my entire life. I've loved video games, and I spent a lot of time by myself playing video games. You know, that was my first babysitter. And the first time I got a television, I was so happy, like my own TV, to play my own games. I don't have to worry about interrupting other people's shows when I wanted to play games. And that carried on throughout my whole life. But I also had a passion for business. You know, I said, was it going to be games or was it going to be business? Which one am I going to go into? And I decided both. I want to go into the business of games, but I will go into the game industry to learn about the game industry, you know? Right. So, yeah, I went to Penn State for 2 years as a business major before I realized that, oh, man, they're kind of training me to be, you know, like a Fortune 500 employee. Like, I'm the second regional vice manager of Northbound Logistics, you know? Like, I have 9 people that work under me. I have a clipboard, and I have a Palm Pilot that I use every day for no reason.
Yep.
You know, like, I didn't want that life. And so that's when I decided to go to art school to make video games. And dropped out of Penn State 2nd year through. And I went to the Art Institute of Orange County. And that was probably one of the best decisions I've made in my life, regardless of the expense. The people that I met, the relationships that I formed, the networks that I was able to build and also be a part of, the experiences that I got just moving to California ahead of time as a student, learning the area, kind of getting set up and established while I was still under that, you know, safety net of a learning environment, right, where you have your rent paid, you have all your classes to go to, you have a very kind of structured, simple life, so long as you have the discipline. And then once that was done and I got a job, it's like, oh, cool, I get to move to Irvine, or oh, cool, I get to move to Los Angeles, like areas that I already knew, that I was already familiar with because I moved out to California. But yeah, that was it for me, man. I haven't looked back ever since. Once I graduated from school, it was just trailblazing, you know, as a designer. So good stuff. But yeah, I think we have really cool stories, but like the people listening now, right? Like we're putting this podcast together because we aim to demystify what it's like to be in the industry. What kind of things do you think a episode 1 podcast about getting into the game industry, staying in, navigating, and you know, the who's who of the game industry, everything that we're going to bring to the table. Can you think of something just off the top of your head? This is a challenge. Can you think of something off the top of your head that was like day one golden nugget notice or knowledge? Like you can go back to Brandon Pham graduating this day, like, yeah, you just got your diploma. What would you say to him first? Don't do it.
That's pretty much it. Don't do it. So my first game job was my real first job of anything. Like I worked at Krisno's for a month while I went to college, and then I pretty much spent the whole college working in the school library, so it's not really a job. So my first real job is when I went over to Tucumán, worked on BioShock 2, and I mean, things were true. Like the things that our instructors or people in the industry was saying was true. Like there was foosball table, there was food. It's a very loose environment. You know, you would get free games every week, you know, and buy the boxes, and it was cool. It was fun. It was exciting. That first month, though, you know, while I was getting the tour, all I heard was this free, free, free food. I was like, man, this is tight. Love eating. I'm going to stay late a lot just to prove that my time here is worth it. Their time spent on me was worth it. So I worked really hard and stayed late nights. And so I would just dig through the fridge, you know, just looking for stuff. And I opened it up and it was like, oh, right in my face. It's like stacked high dinner, the frozen dinner. I'm like, man, this is tight. They just provide us frozen dinners whenever we eat. So I ate frozen dinners pretty much every day for that first month until, like, the last week I started noticing, man, this is getting pretty late. Like, they need to start refilling these frozen dinners. And then as I closed the door, there was a note on the fridge that says, whoever's taking my dinner, stop, motherfucker. Like, pretty cussed out and mad. I was like, oh, shit. I've been eating someone, you know, obviously I've been eating someone's dinner. And, you know, with that, I was very embarrassed. I looked around to make sure no one saw me, you know. And I looked at the box that I already took out, and I, you know, it's like kind of like a send off. I finished that one. There was no point putting it back in. I already opened up the wrapper.
Yeah, you already, you know, if you're on thin ice, you may as well dance.
I got away with it. That's the moral of the story.
Well, no, you didn't, because you just snitched on yourself.
Yeah, but I'm sure that guy doesn't know who I'm talking about.
You're continuing to snitch on yourself.
But that's the first thing I remember when I started the new job. Like, yeah. That defined how noobish I was, how exciting it was, how funny the experience was, and creative, the whole process. Just moving to a new place, starting your new life after college, and things coming true. I mean, it was very fortunate that I found a job after graduating, and I was thankful to work on such a cool game afterwards too. And what's the first thing that you think of about after graduating college?
Yeah, if I could go back to me graduating diploma day one, the first thing I would tell myself is to save money. Yeah. Hands down, that would be the first thing I would tell myself.
That's true.
Like,
Keep going.
No, people can't see my hands, but just pretend you can see my hands. So when I was working at my first job, I was making salary, and I was making this much. And I'm like, oh, this is great. Like, yeah, I'm paid salary. I never had a salary job before, right? Like, no matter what I do, I get the same check. Like, this is awesome. So I was making this much, and I was spending less than that. Let's just say I was spending this much. So the distance in between my two hands, I was like, yes, this is saving. I'm saving money because I'm not spending everything.
Yeah.
That is not saving money. That's just not spending everything.
Yeah.
And so when my project got canceled at that studio and they laid off like 26 people, that's when that little bit of savings that I was making every month became my only source of, you know, money. That was my money. That was it. That's all I had, was that little bit of savings. Obviously, you burn through that in unemployment, and then you use credit cards to, like, oh, well, I'm putting food on my credit card. I'm putting gas on my credit card. And you rack up your credit card bills, and then sooner or later, you realize that you're about to be homeless because you have no income and a lot of bills, you know?
I think everyone has a layoff story, and that's just how the industry is. It's not right. But it's just part of the norm, which is a terrible thing to think about. And that's one of the reasons why I'm so glad that there are starting to be options. Like, Apple, you know, created their phone, but they don't want anything to do with the game industry. They saved the in game industry, but they want nothing to do with the game industry.
Well, why do you say they want nothing to do with the game industry? They're making a lot of things for game development, like
they're starting to
Metal and Swift and all. Well, Swift is for apps, but I think Metal is there.
After Steve Jobs left, yeah, he was pretty adamant. Like, he was a bit, he didn't like games. He didn't want to see his work of art being represented and associated with little toys. And so, but like,
and what's the biggest moneymaker right now?
Yeah, they're starting to realize that. So I'm glad that opened the doors. I mean, Valve making Steam is becoming like the PC leader, and now we've got Apple being the app leader. I mean, it's creating opportunities for people.
Yeah. Well, we need to see more of that. We need to see more safe havens for industry talent, you know, because, like, one of the things I will say about the game industry, and I know that you can vouch for this, is, like, it's no country for old men.
Right.
Like, if you don't make it as a designer to, like, creative director, right? Yeah. Like, you're not going to be some 70-year-old, 60-year-old, 59, 60, 65-year-old designer, right? Like,
yeah.
You're not going to, I just, Maybe, but like, I have a hard time seeing, you know, the relevance. Yeah, and it's not, I'm not attacking the age group. I'm just saying this is an observation.
Yeah.
Out of all the companies I've worked for, I have not seen designers past a certain age. I'll just say that, right?
Something like, just happens.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they just, they take them out back and they introduce them to their retirement plan.
Let's touch on that, right? Like the burnout rate is now no secret. Mm-hmm. Like, game industry churns out a lot of developers. It's crunches, or it's like, you know, salary is reasonable, but at a certain point, it just stops growing after an amount of years of experience. I mean, that's something I would love to talk to you about. Like, how do you feel? You know, I haven't met anyone past 50, like, in any discipline. Like, the oldest I've met is around 50. And I don't think that will last any longer. I mean, the young talents are coming in. They're going to be coming, be cheaper.
Yes, that's the biggest problem. That's what I was waiting for an opportunity to talk about when you brought up salary is the idea that, and it happens in corporate America just like it happens in the game industry now. As you're working for a company and as you get older, you know, you get better, you're more talented, you're refined, you're faster, so you're more valuable. And companies usually give like 1% to 3% raise per year, let's just say for the sake of math. And you've been in the industry now for 25 years, right?
Right.
But you're not graduating out of designer. You're still just like a senior designer, right?
Yeah.
And then here comes some like 19-year-old who started as a junior, 22, now he's a regular designer, 27, now he's a senior designer just like you. Yeah. His 3% add up to a lot less money than your
3%. Right.
And there you go. There's your job gone.
It's a tough thing to figure out. I mean, like, I'm not saying. I think the game industry is reaching a point where pretty much every AAA company is facing the same problem, where they are looking out between the blinds and they're seeing that there's a lot of seniors in their office right now, and there's zero growth.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's nowhere for them to go. And just like anybody who's worked in the industry for a long time, you expect growth, right? If you're not growing, then you're dying.
Well, so, Brandon, you got to keep in mind now, there's various levels of senior.
Sure. You know, I think that's about 3 years into senior, you'll have that speech with your manager. And you're just like, hey, I'm looking for growth. What do you got? Well, we can start looking at various degrees of seniority. I was like, oh, does my salary change? No, but, you know, it's more than that. What can you do that you can you put more into but not get paid as much? That's pretty much the speech you will get. It's like, what can you do for us without us paying you more? Huh? What you should ask yourself. It becomes so introspective, where it becomes borderline bullshit on both sides. So you don't understand what's going on.
Here's another situation that's kind of similar to that. The old lead quits, so the assistant lead gets turned into the lead, but his salary doesn't get converted to the lead salary, right? So like, hey, this manager quit, so let's hire this guy who was like the closest to being the next manager, but we're just going to give him a raise and all the old guy's responsibilities, but we're not going to give him the old guy's salary.
Nope, of course not. We're trading in something new, We're devaluing the position, but at the same time, he's doing the same amount of work.
That's a good trick. That's a good trick. I like that one.
Everyone's doing that, man. They're all switching
through. Oh, man. When you see that one coming, it's just like, oh, here it is. Right out of page 2.
And this is why anyone that works past, I would say, I think after maybe 3 years being in the industry, you pretty much hit a stride where you're coming in doing and expecting to do the same type of stuff. Like, you know, maybe at the beginning of the project, there'd be some creativity going on, you're figuring stuff out. But once you nail that procedure, you're pretty much expected to do it over and over and over again because you're just pumping out assets, pumping out levels, you're pumping out animation, whatever it is. And so that gets pretty boring. I mean, the burnout rate becomes very apparent. It starts right there. Like, if you don't see any growth in your position, in your salary, you're told to crunch more, you're spending less time, you're starting to have family, right, as you progress through your 20s and 30s, and you're starting to face a problem where your salary isn't growing, but the members of your family is, and you're just looking at it as, like, how long can I really do this? Like, I can't really picture myself at a company, or a AAA company, and be able to say 65. Like, like, your talks with your managers becomes more and more and more, more interesting in a way where they're running out of things to ask you. Like, you know, what's your five-year plan is a popular one, and that's going to suddenly turn to two-year plan because most companies don't last past 2 years on average. You know, AAA studios especially are closing in left and right as development costs goes up. So that's just a problem that's going to explode upon itself.
Yeah, man, I honestly, I hate to say this, but I hope that the Xbox One and the PS4 are the last generation of home console. Me, yeah. Personally.
Yeah, because it's just a bad way we're going about it, yeah.
Yeah.
You can't up the system and expect the same amount of money and pump more people. You're just putting more risk onto the project.
Yep. By doing that. You can't. The system's getting better and better, more powerful, stronger. It requires brilliance. It requires talent. It requires effort in order to make the top-level quality on that system. So, therefore, studios have to hire more people, and you have to train more people, and you have to get bigger everything and bigger and better everything. And if your game does not sell, there goes your whole entire studio. You know, it's a sad picture, but it's happening so often. Like, when I think about the jump that we made from PlayStation 2 to PlayStation 3, the graphics fidelity just shot up, and I was like, oh, this is great. Look how cool everything is. Oh, man. But the team sizes also grew exponentially as well. You know, you had a 40-person team turn into a 100-person team, and then PS3 goes to PS4, and you have a 100-person team turn into a 300-person team. I'm talking, like, big games, like Advanced Warfare, right? Like, we're talking the first Call of Duty game, did you see the team size being 300-something people, not including outsourcing and all the other, like, freaking overseas stuff, translation, and all the companies that they work with? Like, I bet you, like, almost 500 names probably roll across a credit screen from a big, big AAA game, like, of all levels of titles and job responsibilities. Yeah. You go back to PlayStation 2, you don't see 500. You see 60, maybe. 60,
yeah.
You know?
And look at that, like, 60 people made a Call of Duty game, and they probably sold, like, the same amount, like, 30 million copies, around $50, like, same price. And then you blow it up to nowadays, when we have a team like 200, 250, costs just the same. So what happens, right? Well, the bonuses are smaller, right? Things like that are not going to be equal. And you know, with the team growing in that size, you're more segmented into staying within your lane, right? So your job becomes more and more repetitive because we have more and more people, because more and more people means the job, the game will ship faster. And so the individual is just going to be stuck doing the same thing. There's no room for growth because it's cramped. It's a cramped space. Just finish, keep your head down and finish the game. What's your complaining about? You know,
exactly. You bring up a good point. I hate magic management math.
Yeah.
I think you know exactly what I'm talking about. For the audience, let me explain. Magic management math is, for example, when you ask somebody, hey, are you a chef? And he says yes. And you ask, how long does it take you to cook a pancake? And he says, it takes me exactly 4 minutes and 30 seconds to cook a pancake. And then you use magic management math and you say, so that means if I have two chefs, it's going to take 2 minutes and 20 seconds to cook a pancake.
Oh, man.
If I have three chefs, it's going to take...
It's a crazy problem, dude.
It doesn't work like that, you know? So
never works like that.
Never. And I'm not saying that that's what producers do. I'm just using that as an illustration as to why you can't just blow up the expectation and not think that the team size needs to grow with those expectations.
Well, that and you, the more bodies you throw into it, the more you devalue the individual. Right? Mm-hmm. The person that was senior, it doesn't matter as much. It's just that senior equals two juniors that I should have hired. And mm-hmm. so, you know, if you put emphasis on manpower, yeah. then the actual guys that's been in the industry that has value mm-hmm. becomes invaluable.
Yes, and it would be a sad day if somebody ever thought that they could look at an Excel spreadsheet and determine talent and value just yep. based on a number. You know, like, oh, well, this person is quote-unquote senior, but these two juniors can replace the senior. You know why someone is senior? Because they have experience. They have been through things that the juniors have not. So granted, the juniors may be able to do models or they may be able to make designs or things like that. But when it comes down to crunch times, when it comes down to bottom of the ninth and people need to dig deep, right? People need to be extraordinarily creative. People need to be extraordinarily efficient or extraordinarily effective. Who's going to be the one that shows up for you, right? I mean, I would put my bets on the person with the experience. Like, hey, I've been through shitty projects before. I know how to get through such and such. Versus a junior may say, holy crap, this is all brand new to me. I just want a model. I don't know how to deal with these, you know, intercompany politics or any of the situations that you may deal with in the workplace. I don't know.
Well, I mean, I got to play the devil's advocate. I completely agree with you. But, like, looking at the other side of the coin, the man... they're looking at a problem where, hey, I got a room full of seniors that cost a lot of money to also keep them true. Around.
Sure.
And now, in the other room, I have a bunch of juniors who are willing to put the extra hours, who are willing to be paid lower just to prove themselves. So if I keep one senior and then manage 10 juniors, then my problem is solved. Right?
Yeah, there's a lot of companies that think that way. And to each his own, I guess, is the best way to answer this one. But since we're doing this podcast talking about the industry, we do have to talk about both sides.
Yep. I mean, of course, we know the value of experience, the value of being able to problem solve based on experience. I'm just so thankful that there are so many choices now that seniors don't feel trapped. Like, if they really want to drive and make something and make a difference, you know, they'll have better luck in a smaller team. Like, will they be able to make things that they want without 10,000 people? Well, I wouldn't say 10,000. Sure. Let's say 5 art directors and managing what you're doing. It's ridiculous.
Oh, man.
I think I remember a time like that where I had 4 leads for one thing that I had to do and I had to get okay from all of them.
4 leads for one thing means that they don't have a single lead.
Yeah. Pretty much.
If you have 4 art leads, you don't have an art lead.
Yeah, you just have extra bodies just taking up oxygen.
4 art leads means, to me, whoever's on top of managing those art leads didn't have the gusto to just make the decision and say, you have the power, everyone else is below you.
It's family. What's that word where you give your family a job? What is that?
A hookup? I don't know. What do you mean?
There's some legal term where when you're not supposed to give favorism towards a family.
Yeah, favorism.
Yeah. But whatever that is, I mean, like, you reach a certain point. You got to hate and love them at the same time. You're facing a real problem. Right? Like, this is not against any good leads out there, which there are. Mm-hmm. I mean, very good leads.
There's at least 3, man.
Yeah, at least 3.
At least 3.
Yeah, I can count on
I'm just kidding. Hand. I'm just kidding.
What I mean is, like, there's more bad leads than good leads, in my opinion. Just based on my own experience.
Do you you really believe that there's more bad leads than good leads in the whole industry?
Oh, yeah, of course.
How does something like that happen?
I don't know. Maybe because of all this bullshit. You got to learn how to sling some to receive some. Like, I think at a certain point, you gotta have to start lying to yourself. Right? So, management never want to solve the problems that we are talking about. Like, it's a clear problem, but they have meetings. They have meetings so that they don't solve it right away, but they can somehow figure out a way to make it look like they're solving the problem. And you, I'm sure audience out there have seen a walker or walking by right now in a meeting room, and you can just see gestures being made into the thing. But 6 months later, the same problem are still there. Now, I feel that
I can agree on that.
Yeah. And, you know, it really just comes down to they don't want to solve the issues within the studio. Like, the issues that there's no reason why, which, I mean, there are, but too many people are taking breaks throughout the day who usually walks in twos. And we've been through this many times. We worked through companies twice, right?
Yeah, I know exactly what you're about to talk about. Yeah.
Pretty much any time we have a team meeting, just groups of twos and threes just start leaving and having these walks around the block. It doesn't even matter where you walk. You just keep on walking. Sometimes you just, like, walk around the longest path just because I didn't finish what I was going to say, and you're here to listen to what I'm going to say, so that's about two more blocks of conversations. But it's just one of those things that it's understood among our colleagues. But management, I don't know, they kind of like in their own world sometimes, I feel like. They don't want to believe that they're bad guys. And this is the thing I learned about bad guys, right? And I'm not saying they're done burning babies or anything. I'm just saying, well, you know, the bad guys, in quotations, of a studio, they never really see themselves as the villain.
Yeah. I will, addressing just leads and, like, bad leads, one of the things that I can say is management is actually a skill. Like, being a good leader versus definitely. A boss, there's a difference between a leader and a boss, right?
Oh, definitely, yeah. And not talking about those.
No, sure. But, I mean, like, those words may get used interchangeably, but they are not synonyms.
Yes.
There's vast differences between leader and boss. And in my mind, management takes a skill. Like, certain people just don't really have great management skills. But you know what they were? They were very, very good artists or very good designers who just so happened to be at the top of the totem pole when the new lead needed to get picked.
We're in an industry full of geeks and nerds, all right? I'm a geek, you're a geek. Everyone can relate to this. I mean, we really like niches within society. And so while we're going to art school, while we're doing this, we kind of stay within our niche. Like, we don't really travel outside the classroom or outside the workplace too much. I mean, of course, there's a lot of us that have social lives and all these things, but management skills is not a class that we ever have taken. It's always outside skills that contribute to that. And so I can understand why we have bad leads, because you're suddenly asked to lead a team, to manage a group of people that you used to work with, and you don't want to, and you have, all our artists have some kind of insecurity, right, within us. And so when we're handed power, most of the time we abuse it because we don't know how to handle it.
You want
to
drop your nuts on the table.
Exactly. Drop it on all tables for no reason. So I get it. I don't agree with it, but I get it. Like, I totally understand why.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. You said most leads are bad, so that leads me to believe that you've had some good leads.
Of course. Okay. I have great leads.
So anyone listening on the podcast, some may be leads or some may be people who are just disgruntled because they have bad leads. What are the things that you see that have stood out as, wow, this person's a good lead? Like, where did they, you know, go the extra mile, or where did they, I guess, make themselves known as being a good lead?
I think a good lead is not just unique to the game industry. This goes across all types of disciplines, all types of industries. And it's pretty much, a lead is not particularly a person that is leading. Mm-hmm. It's accommodating. It's accommodating needs for the person he's managing. Mm. That, to me, is like the greatest quality of a leader, where he just, instead of like telling people what to do, of course he has to have that ability, but it's more about listening. It's like listening, what does my team need? What concerns do they have? How can I fix it? How do I make your job easier so that you can just come in and do your stuff without worrying about anything else? Mm. And secondly, you know, even if you don't have that first quality, if you're this guy where I can drop dead at a moment's notice and he can just shove me off the chair and do my work on top of whatever responsibilities have before. That to me is another great leader. Like being able to perform when it's necessary, being able to pick up when your team cannot deliver. Right? Mm. That's huge. Those two things to me stands out in my past experience of what a great leader is. How about you? How do you feel about it?
So one of the things that I've seen or that I look for in a lead or in any sort of management position is strength.
Yeah.
But also not necessarily mercy, but just an understanding and acknowledgement of how and when to use strength. Right. So like if someone is creating a problem in a workplace, I don't want them to necessarily be confrontational about it, but I want them to be able to identify like, wow, you know what? This person is creating conflicts. I need to go and handle that because it's bringing my team productivity down. Let's see. I'm just going to say that and that characteristic is hard to find in a lot of people as well, because a lot of people don't want to deal with conflicts, or they don't want to deal with, hey, look, you and you, let's work this shit out. We're gonna, you know what I mean? Like, hey, come over here. Let's look, you're coming in past 10 o'clock every day. Everyone else is here working. We can't, like, there's hard conversations that need to be had. Right. And I don't like leads that can't just tell it like it is.
Yeah.
Like, it's so important to look another adult in the face and just tell them the truth sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's a skill that apparently a lot of people don't have.
They're just too scared to be confrontational. But it's true. Like, if you're expected to do the hard stuff, you're expected to do the things that others cannot, and if you can't, it's disappointing.
Yeah.
But it's not my job. Just tell them. Tell them coming early.
We are 46 minutes and 17 seconds into the Game Dev Unchained podcast. This is episode number one. We are going off the top, having a great time. Once again, this is your host, Larry Charles, and
Brandon Pham.
It was hella late.
You can cut that out.
Sure. Let's I lost train of thought. Let's take a quick break. We're going to run a commercial. We will come right back and close out the podcast. Just want to thank everybody for watching. We will be right back after this quick commercial break from our sponsor. Hey there, would you like to learn about making video games? Then you definitely need to check out GameSchoolOnline.com. It's the number one place to learn about video game development. We've got talented instructors who are currently industry professionals who are teaching classes and making tutorials to help you become a video game developer today. Okay, welcome back to the Game Dev Unchained podcast. Once again, this is your host, Larry Charles, and
Brandon Pham.
Boom. Much better that time. And yeah. We're going to bring it home with one last quick topic. I think I would like to end it with, how do you make friends in the game industry from people you don't know? That's a terrible question.
You having problems with this, Larry?
What I'm trying to say is, there's new people watching this podcast who are probably going to be going into the game industry for the first time, right?
Yeah.
You're going to be working with multiple types of personalities. Now, whether or not you like these individuals, you still have to work with them. So the question that I failed miserably at trying to ask is, how is it that you can get to work with different types of people, people that you may like, people that you may not like, and still get things done, still work as a team? What's your take on that?
I will draw from my own experience, but I've seen it done this way as well. As soon as you start a new job, it's the things that you do outside of the job that actually creates better friendships, in my opinion. Like, just sitting there, yeah, you can ask about techniques and stuff, but it's the time that you go out on lunch, or you go out and play basketball, or you ask to hang out after work. Things like that, you know, just normal things without pushing it and making it natural, has been effective. Like, just don't try too hard. And don't be weird, because that can go a long way, and it will follow you as far as trying to leave a company, and then Bill, I mean, between both of us, like, we have stories of people, like, legends that we've heard.
That could be its own podcast. We should probably do that.
Just, like, yeah, we can do a whole podcast of stories of people that we've heard and we've met. Like, I would be 5 years caring about a story, and I finally would meet them just because how small the industry is. You finally would work with someone like that.
Yeah.
And it's just funny.
I'm still waiting to meet your buddy Sandwich.
Yeah, I know.
His name has been changed to protect the innocent, by the way. Yeah. I'll take a stab at my own question, too. So when I think about working in the game industry, there are people you will like, and they'll be easy to work with. But sometimes they may be too easy to work with. You may find yourself too excited to talk to an individual or to share stories and fun and be around certain people where you could let your work slip, right? The trick is, don't do that.
Right.
Find time, like you said, outside of work to develop those encouraging relationships. So, like, yourself and I, right? Like, we're the best of friends. And I was in your wedding and you will be in mine, right? Like, we're a dynamic duo. I can't think of a time where either one of us has ever overindulged in the friendship while at work. You know what I mean? As easy as we could have just spent all day talking and laughing and stuff, we always make sure that we had maybe a quick little 30-second, 1-minute, 2-minute talks during the workday, take breaks when necessary, but we got our stuff done. That's the easy part. The hard part is when you work with or near someone that you actually don't like, right? Like,
I think we've observed this from both perspectives. Like, I've seen people come up to you and talk to you for like an hour. I just laugh. With people you don't like. It's the funniest thing.
Thanks for just sitting there laughing at my misery. I appreciate that.
Oh, we'll talk about this sometime. We have stories about that too.
So I will just say my tactic for handling people I don't like is I have faith in human resources and protocol. So in the event that somebody treats me wrong or that somebody oversteps a boundary, I know that I don't necessarily have to go into explicit detail to handle the situation myself, right? Like, if I'm ever wronged, I can bring that grievance up to the proper channels, know that I voiced my opinion, and then they can handle it behind the scenes, right? Like, you can't always just get in people's face and tell them, look, you bother me, this and that, right? Because some people can't handle that type of thing. Some people would then look at you as the aggressor, you know, especially, and I'll just say it, I'm a big African-American individual.
Yeah.
I hate that it's this way, but I have to be very careful how I communicate with people because it's so easy for people to paint a negative picture of me.
Oh, I see it.
It's very easy. It's very easy for them to just say, Larry did this and that, and the story is believed.
Sometimes I do it for fun, and they believe me.
It's crazy. So, yes, I actually, if I know that I'm working with somebody who I don't get along with very well, I know that there are systems in place that will handle grievances if they occur. But two, I also respect the fact that this person is considered a professional, right? Yeah. So even if I can't stand him and he can't stand me, if we have a deadline, I hope that I can trust in his own ability to want to survive that he's going to do his job.
Yeah.
And if he does not, or if she does not, then if it gets to a point where, like, the whole team is being brought down, like, someone's not pulling their weight, so therefore the whole team is losing, or at least a noticeable amount of my team is losing, then I bring it up to the lead. Like, hey, I don't know if you're paying attention, but so-and-so is not really working to the best of their ability. Right. And then you don't stab them, though. You say, maybe we should talk to him and see what's going on. Let's try to help the guy. Like, always come from that angle first. Because you don't want to have yourself look like you're out to get people, right? You're expressing it as concern for the team and the individual that you're talking about. Even if you don't like them, you still want the game to succeed, right? The company still thought enough of that person to hire them. So therefore, at least give them the benefit of the doubt on the first time. Like, hey, let's see if there's something we can do to help. We can do to help. Those are both positive things in a negative situation versus F that guy, he's not working, I'm going to go tattle on him in my next meeting. And then they're sitting there writing notes about you being aggressive or being, you know, not a team player or, you know.
I would add to that, I totally agree. Keep close attention to accepted as psychos. Do the exact opposite. You want, if Crazy Lenny asks you out to lunch, you go out to lunch with him. You got to make sure that you guys are cool, right? And we know the types that we're talking about at every work company. There's going to be a weirdo one that you don't know what's going to go on if you say something bad, right? If something goes off, you want to make sure you're cool with them because this is a real thing, all right? That's my warning to you.
Okay, okay. I got to ask, man, how many Crazy Lennies have you worked with? Because you have, like, a whole strategy, like, all planned out.
Crazy Lenny doesn't know that he's crazy, right? Okay. That's how I got to start with that. And every company I've been at, I've always been able to spot the crazy ones or, you know, just making sure that I'm good, I'm safe. Like, I would give him an extra high in the morning. I would give him an extra compliment when it's unnecessary. Just making sure that Crazy Lenny is happy. So just be careful out there. Like, just be observant. That's really what it is. And our industry is a very, we like working in the dark. We like being in the computer. The more time that you spend behind the computer, the better. So the exceptionally really good ones are usually antisocial in a way where you just got to be careful. Like, you just got to be careful what you say. So Larry's approach is just treat everyone nicely. Don't go confrontational right away. You know, seek other ways to deal with the situation. It's always the safest bet.
And the other thing is I can't go confrontational right away because I lose even if I'm the victim. Yeah, even if I'm the victim. I saw, this isn't even video game related today, but I saw something that turned my stomach. So I was on Facebook at work on my second monitor, not the work monitor, the second monitor. And there was a video posted of two guys arguing. One looked like a big, heavy set, kind of like maybe like an Arab guy or like, I don't know where he was from, maybe that kind of Persian or something.
Yeah.
And then, like, DJ Khaled. Like, DJ, he looks like DJ Khaled.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the guy he's arguing with is a black guy, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Then they start fighting. Like, they're really fighting. Like, it's like a full-on, like, really trying to hurt each other fight. And it goes on for about 2 minutes of fighting. And these guys suck at fighting. They're like, they're just, you know, like, throwing hands all over the place.
Right, right, right.
Then the police show up to the video, right?
I already know.
They grab the black dude and throw him to the ground.
Of course. You gotta grab the threat. Him.
Yes.
You can grab
and he's
threat.
On the ground, minimal, like neutralized and shit. And then they kindly walk over to the Arab guy and they're like asking him questions and making sure he's okay. Then they find out that he was involved in the fight and it was like both of them. Then they're like, oh shoot, we look bad. Sorry, sir. Can you please turn around so we can put some handcuffs on you? So the dude turns himself around and he holds his hands up and they nicely put the handcuffs on him. Jeez. I was so sick when I saw that. I was so sick. And it just, like, it just.
So bad.
It just happened. And it's like, oh, man. So I'm not saying that the game industry is racist, not in any way. I'm very fortunate to be African American and to have been as successful as I have. Yeah. And if I face racism or not, I'm not saying that the game industry is or is not racist.
I just want to say, Larry, you entering the industry, we're up 2% on black people.
See?
I just want to thank you.
Oh my God. See, that's just. Yeah.
You're a unicorn. You're pretty much a unicorn. There's not a lot.
Oh,
they're starting to, and I'm glad.
Yeah.
I can't really say Asians are minorities anymore.
Hell no. Are you in the game industry, man? Please. You guys started the game industry. You're talking about them.
We're minority. Started.
Yeah, you're the grandfathers of the game industry, man.
Pretty good.
OG. All right, guys. We had a great time entertaining you for this hour. Hopefully, you learned a thing or two. And even more importantly, hopefully, you're going to stick around. You're going to get episodes regularly from us. We want to appreciate you. We appreciate you for sticking around. And I'm going to sign out before I make any more rambled words. Brandon, take it away. Tell the good folks what they want.
I'm glad you guys listen. Look forward to more episodes. We're going to talk to game industry veterans about the transitions into either independent or, you know, their journey going through the game industry, their experiences. And we're really here to learn about what we can do to fix the problem. So we're good. Signing off.
Until next time, guys, make sure you like, comment, and subscribe wherever you can, however you can. Please show support to the podcast. It goes a long way, we promise you. All right. Peace.